It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska. 43 degrees up here on the hill, overcast skies, wind speeds of 16 from the northeast out at the airport right now. We're looking for scattered showers today and mostly cloudy skies with a high near 41. East winds to 15, gusting to 20. For tonight, a slight chance of rain showers mixing with snow after 10, then gradually ending. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 32. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies will give way to sunny skies. High near 44 tomorrow with northwest winds to 5, becoming completely calm tomorrow afternoon. Coming up on the Midday Report, a federal judge has doubled down on a decision to uphold hunting restrictions and brown bear baiting in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. Alaska is experiencing its first large wildfire of the season. A grand jury in Sitka has indicted a man on 6 felony weapons and drug charges.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Ukraine's industrial heartland is in the grip of what Kyiv and Moscow are both describing as a new phase in their war. While Russian attacks intensify in eastern Ukraine, NPR's Dave Blanchard reports on deal-making underway to at least reduce the bloodshed.
Ukraine and Russia have been at a standstill for several days when it comes to establishing humanitarian corridors for civilians out of combat zones. But Ukrainian officials announced today the two countries have agreed to a new prisoner exchange. Ukraine received 60 soldiers and 16 civilians in the deal. No numbers were given on how many Russians were exchanged. Ukrainian leaders also announced today they abandoned the city of Krymina to Russian forces. President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russia has begun the battle for Donbas in eastern Ukraine. Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov also says the offensive has started in the east. Though U.S. defense officials warn the most intense fighting has yet to start. Dave Blanchard, NPR News, Kyiv, Ukraine.
The U.S. says Russia is increasing capabilities for sustainment for larger battles to come. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby speaks to the urgency to get more help to Ukraine.
We're doing the best we can to focus on, A, the kinds of capabilities we know they need and that they say they want and are using. B, secondary to that, to try to get them systems that they don't need a lot of startup time for, that they can put in the field almost immediately. And short of that, where we can't meet one or two, to be able to provide some level of familiarization and or training as required.
Meanwhile, Washington's also focused on China's military threat to allies in Asia. It's alarmed by China's new security agreement with the Solomon Islands. The State Department spokesman says the pact could enable China to deploy military forces to the Solomon Islands. The White House says it's sending two U.S. officials to the South Pacific nation this week. While some travelers are celebrating a federal judge's ruling ending the federal mask mandate for travel, public health experts warn it could lead to an increase in more severe cases of COVID-19. NPR's David Shaper reports that those concerns are not limited to air travel.
Julia Rafman of Boston University School of Public Health says while air filtration systems on planes are very good, they may not prevent the spread of COVID between unmasked passengers sitting shoulder to shoulder for hours at a time. And she's also concerned about what the end of the mask mandate will mean to mass transit riders.
I think this really puts people at high risk, or people who have children under the age of 2 who are too young to be vaccinated, too young to wear a mask, and at high risk of severe COVID. It really puts them in a challenging position.
For now, transit agencies in Chicago, Seattle, New York, and many other cities still require masks on buses and trains, but masks are now optional on systems in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., among others. David Shaper, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Alaska Airlines announced yesterday it is ending its mask requirement. In a press release, the airline said that, effective immediately, masks are optional on Alaska Airlines flights and in airports across the country. The decision came after a federal judge overturned the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's mask mandate for airplanes and other forms of public transportation. Last week, the federal transportation mask mandate was extended through May 3rd so that health officials could further study the new Omicron variant of COVID-19. Yesterday's decision made that extension irrelevant. Recently, the CEOs of the country's major airlines had signed a request to President Joe Biden to drop the mandate, and the governors of 21 states, including Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy, sued the federal government over the mandate. Alaska Airlines had a mask requirement for passengers for 2 years. The company's press release specifically addresses passengers who had been banned from flying on the airline for refusing to wear a mask, saying that some guests whose, quote, behavior was particularly egregious, unquote, would remain banned even after the mask policy ended. Alaska is experiencing its first large wildfire of the season, and it's burning near Wethluk. Officials say the fire is not currently threatening villages, but it is threatening the Wethluk fish weir and two native allotments. KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports the Department of Natural Resources says fires around this time of year are normal.
As of noon on Monday, the fire had grown to 2,000 acres. It's burning 25 miles east from Wethluk, 34 miles southeast from Bethel, and 35 miles southeast from Nopakiak. The cause of the fire is unknown. According to KLKC, a spokesperson from the Alaska Division of Forestry, the wildfire is the largest of the season so far in the state.
When you have a long, big, deep winter like we had in Alaska, that areas are dried out and getting these 16-hour days and 17-hour days of sunlight, you're going to have that possibility.
He says tundra fires in April are not uncommon. Casey says as the spring snow melts, the sun dries out the dead brown vegetation, turning it into kindling. That kindling can quickly ignite and become a tundra fire. The Division of Forestry says it plans to investigate the cause of the fire. Commercial pilots first spotted smoke from the tundra blaze on Saturday at noon. They reported it to the state. A pilot and firefighter from the Alaska Division of Forestry's Fire Prevention Branch flew over the fire on Saturday and Sunday. Casey says though the fire is threatening two native allotments and a fish weir, it is not expected to endanger villages or lives. After hearing reports that the fire was moving westward toward Three Step Mountain, the division planned to fly over the fire again on Monday evening. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
A federal judge doubled down on a decision to uphold restrictions on hunting and brown bear baiting in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. The ruling squashes another attempt from the state of Alaska and hunting advocates to overturn a contentious Obama-era rule. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Local conservationist groups cheer the decision. Nicole Schmidt is executive director of Alaska Wildlife Alliance, one of the case's intervening defendants. She says her group is excited, particularly for the brown bear protections that will be upheld.
For people who live in the Kenai area and who enjoy the refuge, enjoy seeing the bears and recreating in this high-use area, I think it is a decision that strengthens that those opportunities are still going to be available and protects Kenai brown bears to the extent that they need to be protected as a distinct, genetically distinct population.
The decision is the latest in a legal battle dating back to 2016, when then-President Barack Obama imposed a set of regulations for the federally managed Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. The so-called Kenai Rule placed restrictions on hunting and trapping in the 2-million-acre refuge, including limits on baiting brown bears. Soon after that rule passed, hunting advocacy group Safari Club International and the state of Alaska sued the feds, arguing they overstepped their authority. They said the rule that first established the refuge, the 1980 Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, gives the state the ultimate authority to regulate hunting on its federal lands. The district court judge disagreed and ruled in favor of the feds in the original Kenai rule in 2020. Soon after that, Safari Club and the state appealed. This week, a judge with the Ninth Circuit Court upheld that original decision. Judge Ronald Gould agreed the federal government has power over Alaska's public lands, even if ANILCA gives the state responsibility for its wildlife. And when state and federal regulations compete, He wrote, "The federal regulations prevail." Doug Vincent Lang is the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, which has argued against the refuge restrictions since they were first passed in 2016. He was in a meeting and wasn't able to talk on the phone before airtime. But in an email, he said the department is disappointed in the ruling and believes the court, quote, failed to understand the intricacies of ANILCA relative to state and federal management authority. He said Fish and Game will consider its options going forward. Regina Lennox, attorney for Safari Club, says the same. She says the U.S. Supreme Court has a recent history of reversing Ninth Circuit rulings related to ANILCA. She points to a case in 2019 when the court ruled the state and not the National Park Service could regulate its rivers. For her part, Schmidt says she hopes it's the end to what's been a years-long court process.
This appeal essentially upholds the original decision that the 2015 rule was legal and in matching the interests of the refuge and its management decisions. And so I don't know that there's much else to go up, you know, beyond this.
Several years back, President Donald Trump proposed a related slate of changes to refuge rules that would have allowed brown bear baiting and would reverse restrictions on trapping near trailheads in the Kenai Refuge. But those proposed changes were never passed. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
A group of Good Samaritans recently attempted to save an abandoned baby sea otter pup on Kodiak Island. The effort brought together a collection of veterinarians, pilots, and biologists to try and help a young animal in distress. KMXT's Dylan Simard reports.
Jeannie Frio was enjoying a recent Saturday morning walk on Calson Beach with her dog shortly before noon. It was unseasonably warm on April 9th in Kodiak.
My little dachshund growled, and usually when she growls, I'm immediately looking for a bear. But she ran out in front of me and stopped at this little furry pile on the beach, and it moved, and I called her back and went up, and there was this little sea otter.
Otters on the beach are not uncommon. Often they are mature and sometimes lifeless. She knew right away that something was amiss with the young animal. There's no visible blood or injury, but the otter was listless, and its mom was nowhere in sight. Frio called her friend, who in turn contacted Shunack tribal biologist Matt Van Dale. He directed her to call the stranding hotline for the Alaska Sea Life Center, while he notified members of a Kodiak response team. The Sea Life Center greenlighted the recovery less than 2 hours later, and Van Dale was on his way.
There are a lot of cases in which folks will see a sea otter pop on the beach, and it's completely normal. The mom just left it there and she's going to come back for it.
The Sea Life Center gets many calls that describe that situation. In the overwhelming majority of cases, the mother is off hunting and the baby will be just fine. But occasionally, sea otter mothers will abandon pups that are sickly or have a middling chance of survival.
When I got there on the scene, I was able to see that it was a very, very small pup. And this was she was right up in the rack line of the high tide, and there was something wrong.
The pup was lethargic when Van Dale arrived, and ravens and eagles were harassing it. At this point, the mother had been away for hours and was unlikely to return. The recovery team swaddled the female pup and brought her to a vet clinic in town. The Sea Life Center in Seward agreed to admit her. Alaskan Airlines was contacted to fly her out, and a flight was arranged for Sunday morning. In the meantime, Van Dale and his team were caring for the sea otter, now named Kelsey, at the clinic, its first in a decade.
She started really perking up a lot. We were very, very hopeful and optimistic, and then, about 4 or 5 in the morning, just started getting kind of lethargic. We're thinking, maybe she's just finally relaxing and sleeping it off.
Van Dale left at midnight and returned the next morning to bring Kelsey to the jet for her flight to Anchorage.
We saw, I think it was probably in association with a softball tournament, but, a school bus pulled up and, all the kids got out, and so we went and had a chat with the air cargo folks, like, hey, maybe you could have the pilot make an announcement that they're sharing the flight with a very special passenger and to send her some good vibes because, the flight is the most stressful part. So, yeah, that was nice.
But it wasn't to be. Kelsey did not survive the one-hour flight. What ultimately killed her is unknown, though a necropsy has been ordered. There is a positive side to the story. The system in place for this rescue couldn't have worked any better than it did. Coordinating air transport, veterinary care, a rescue team getting approval for the rescue, these aren't things that can typically be done on 3 hours' notice. While most apparent strandings are simply sea otter mothers leaving their babies alone to secure a meal, that doesn't mean that people shouldn't report them. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
A grand jury in Sitka has indicted a man on 6 felony weapons and drug charges for allegedly illegally possessing guns and around $150,000 worth of drugs. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
On March 18th, Sitka police officer Richard Munier was called to the Sitka Rocky Gutierrez Airport by a TSA agent who says he discovered an undeclared pistol in 44-year-old William Scott Noel's luggage. Authorities say Noel had several felony offenses on his record, including weapons charges, making it illegal for him to possess a concealed firearm. Several weeks later, on April 8th, Sitka police arrested Noel at the Super 8 Motel and charged him for illegal firearms possession. Officer Munier obtained a search warrant after he says he found evidence of narcotics in Noel's hotel room during the arrest. During a search of Noel's room and vehicle, police say they seized a handgun, a rifle, approximately 180 fentanyl pills, over 200 grams of methamphetamine, and over 100 grams of heroin. Police estimate the street value of the narcotics at around $150,000. On April 14th, Noel was indicted by a grand jury on 6 felony drug and weapons charges, including 2 counts of misconduct involving a controlled substance in the second degree and 1 in the third degree, as well as 1 count of misconduct involving weapons in the second degree and 2 in the third degree. Noel is being held at the Sitka jail on $125,000 bail. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Saturday marked the 10th annual Yupik Spelling Bee and the 2nd annual Inupiaq Spelling Bee. As Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports, the organizers say it's more than just a friendly competition.
Nunamikwa 7th grader Elena Canoe took first place in the 10th annual Yupik Spelling Bee.
I'm a bit shocked, and I was just a little bit scared, but mostly confident.
There was one word she found really difficult to spell.
Yupik.
It means sock, and it's spelled C-U-U-K-I-I-Q.
I just forgot one U.
Canoe was one of 13 third through eighth graders competing in the Yupik competition. They came to Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage from all over the state, including Akiachak, Akiak, Dillingham, Nunamikwa, and Stebbins. After the judges read a word, students could ask them to repeat it or provide the definition.
Gaga. He is sweeping it. He is sweeping it.
Gaga. K-A-G-I-A.
Reading the definitions was Frida Dan, organizer of the Yupik contest. She says the spelling bee gives students the opportunity to practice reading and writing a language they might only speak or hear.
This might be the only time they'll ever get to learn how to spell. Maybe afterward, it never happens ever again. So this is a really big opportunity.
3 students competed in this weekend's Inupiaq competition, and 13 competed in the Yupik one. Even though it was a small group, Dan says their drive to learn is inspiring.
It feels like they're reaching for this. They're reaching to have this. They take it upon themselves to do this, And that's what keeps me going year after year, is feeling the enthusiasm of the spellers.
Dan set up the first Yupik Spelling Bee 10 years ago. She came up with a list of words and created study guides for coaches around the state. She's also part Inupiaq, and in recent years, she worked with volunteers to set up the Inupiaq Spelling Bee. Spectators weren't allowed at last year's competition because of COVID. And only 1 school signed up to participate in the Inupiaq Bee last year. But for Dan, that's okay.
The pandemic made me realize that it was really okay just to have 1 school in because their effort was so inspiring and they were so brave. And then I have to realize that whatever I get, it's worth it for that child.
Susick Mary Huntington is the coordinator of the Inupiaq Spelling Bee. She says determining the correct spelling of a word can be a difficult process that's loaded with meaning. An elder might spell a word differently than she usually does, or there might be an anglicized pronunciation that could confuse a student learning how to spell. Despite the challenges, Susick says, Promoting literacy in native languages through the spelling bee is vital.
Almost any place in our language learning journey of second language learners of our heritage languages have so many structures built in that shut us down and make us feel inferior and incapable. And any opportunity to eliminate the judgment and the inadequacy factors, they're not just helpful, they're 100% needed.
In the auditorium this weekend, 16 students took that opportunity to make sure Yupik and Inupiaq don't fade away. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Insight Daily Radio. Country music icon Trace Adkins is back for a third season of INSP's cowboy competition series, Ultimate Cowboy Showdown. In Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, top cowboys from across the United States compete to win a herd of cattle worth at least $50,000, a coveted belt buckle, and a lifetime of bragging rights. Each week, viewers will watch them lock horns in a series of grueling individual and team challenges. They are judged on their skills, knowledge, grit, and passion. Chock full of explosive drama and lots of ego, the pressure is on for the cowboys to prove they have what it takes. We spoke to Trace about this exciting series.
My favorite part about hosting the show is just watching these people who are at the top of their game in their field, watching these people with their talents and their skills on display for the world to see. And I get to sit there on the front row and watch this stuff up close and personal. And it is astounding to watch these people. It's incredible that there are people that can do what they do. I'm just happy to be there watching it. The hardest part, hands down, is having to let good people go. There has to be one winner, and that's tough. All these people are deserving, or they wouldn't be there.
That's country music icon Trace Adkins, letting viewers know what they can expect in the third season of INSP's cowboy competition series, Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, which premieres Thursday, April 21st at 8 p.m. Eastern on INSP. There's more at www.ultimatecowboyshowdowntv.com. Insight Daily Radio.
Do you need to see a doctor, dentist, or optometrist? Arctic Care is offering no-cost medical, dental, optometry, and veterinary services to anyone in the Kodiak community May 4th through May 13th. To learn more about the services available through Arctic Care, the location of services, and to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 907-486-9870. Arctic Care 2022 is a no-cost healthcare service program provided by the United States Department of Defense Arctic Care Innovative Readiness Training Program in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Here's your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 19th day of April, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 6:48. It won't set again until 9:30. That will give us 14 hours and 43 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 64 degrees set in 1965, and our record low was 14 set in 1920. It's currently 41 degrees under overcast skies out at the airport. Northeast winds to 16. Scattered showers for the rest of the day. East winds to 15, gusting to 20. Slight chance of rain showers mixing with snow after 10 p.m. tonight, then gradually ending. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 32. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, too. Gradually becoming mostly sunny with a high near 44 tomorrow. Northwest winds to 5, becoming completely calm tomorrow afternoon. They're also talking about mostly clear skies Wednesday night and partly sunny skies on Thursday. Although they are saying you're going to see rain after that. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 5:04 this afternoon. That will be a 7.3-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 10:26 p.m. of 1.7 feet. Your next high tide will be at 4:38 a.m., a 10-foot tide, followed by a low tide tomorrow morning here on the east side at 11:28 a.m. at minus 1.4 feet. Over on the west side, that high tide will occur at 5:25 this afternoon for you and be 13.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:07 p.m. of 2.4 feet, a high tide in the wee hours at 5:08 a.m. of 15.5 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow will be at 11:54 a.m., just about noon, minus 2 1/3 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side, small craft advisory through Wednesday. East winds to 25 knots today and seas to 11 feet. For tomorrow, north wind to 15, seas to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory today. Northeast 25 and seas to 7 feet today in the Shelikof. That'll be coming down to northeast 20 tonight and seas to 5 feet. Variable 10 tomorrow, seas coming down to 2 feet tomorrow night. You are invited to an open house at the Kodiak Fire Station tonight between 5:30 and 7:30 to meet the team from Wolf Architecture that will help design the replacement for the 60-year-old facility. Come by and enjoy a warm beverage and a cookie while you learn more about this essential project and share your thoughts. You can be a part of shaping the future of emergency response in Kodiak for the next 60 years. That's tonight, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the fire station downtown. Also tonight, Service Area Number 1 will be having their board meeting. That'll be happening at 5:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. On Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. Isle Bell's 11th Annual Spring Ring is coming up. That's happening May 1st. That's a Sunday at 3 p.m. It's $15 general admission, and it will be held at the good old Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Every Wednesday, the Kodiak Public Library hosts a Lego Club. It's a drop-in program for youth after school. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Thursday is the library's next chess club meeting. That's happening at 3:30 p.m. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open to all ages. Again, that's Thursday at 3:30 p.m. No story time this week. But library trivia returns next Monday, April 25th. That'll be happening at 6:30 p.m. via Zoom. Find the Zoom link on the library's homepage and join in the fun to sharpen the old gray matter. All are welcome to the library trivia on Monday. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. If you have any questions, call them at 486-8686. The award-winning Kodiak Shakespeares are proud to present their final production of the season, the literary classic William Golding's Lord of the Flies. Adapted for the stage by Nigel Williams, Lord of the Flies takes place in the midst of a raging war and follows a group of schoolchildren from preteens to teenagers who find themselves alone on a deserted tropical island. They at first develop rules and a system to govern themselves, but their civilization eventually devolves into a bloody climax. This classic story explores the dark side of humanity and questions the very idea of civilization and may not be suitable for younger audiences. Performances will take place at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium starting Thursday, April 21st through Saturday, April 23rd, with showings at 6:30 p.m., and on Sunday, April 24th, there will be a matinee showing at 2 p.m. Tickets are $15 for adults and $5 for students and can be available at kodiakshakespeares.ludus.com and at the door. Contact Jared Griffin with more questions at 907-942-1903.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20 and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.